From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Thousands of Americans have fallen under the spell of steamy Bikram yoga. Some are looking for enlightenment. Some just want to lose 5 pounds. A few go all in to national and international yoga competitions. My guest today, a former competitive yogi, has seen it all. His new book takes us to the extremes of yoga in America, and it's not all ohms and namastes. This hour on Point, a deep look at yoga. You can join the conversation. Has yoga changed your life, your body? What's at the heart of it for you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's hear a little of that yoga instruction. Many Americans know it very well by now. Bikram yoga, the one that my guest did, the hot one, the steamy one, it's got a very much living founder. Here's Bikram Chowdhury. Founder of Bikram Yoga, coaching students through on his beginner's CD, through the standing separate leg head to knee pose.
Now go down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If anybody feeling dizzy, nauseous, throw up, it's a good news. You must be happy. That's why you pay for. This is not a cheesecake factory, or I don't sell power here. Come up. Arms and head together. Stop in the middle. Turn to the left. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Bikram Torture Chamber to kill yourself for next 90 minutes and go down, everybody.
If you feel nauseous, throw up, it's good news. You must be happy. Bikram Chowdhury right there. We're going to hear in this hour from yoga champ Cynthia Ware and famed yoga teacher Judith Lassiter. But first, Benjamin Lohr joins us from New York, a writer and former competitive yogi. He's out with a book called Hell Bent: Obsession, Pain, and the Search for Something Like Transcendence in Competitive Yoga. Benjamin Lohr, welcome.
Hey, great to be here, Tom.
What are you feeling as you hear that voice? You know Bikram Chowdhury rather well, you and others. And there's his voice right in your ear. Does it bring the sweat back?
Oh, yes. Bikram's a unique guy. There's this Hunter S. Thompson quote I always think about when it's, there he goes, one of God's own prototypes, some kind of high-powered mutant never even considered for mass production, too weird to live, too rare to die. And every time I think about Bikram, that quote slams me in the head because he is one of those hyper-real figures. You know, if you wrote him down in a fiction book, people wouldn't believe him.
Too weird to live, too rare to die. And I have to admit, I mean, I've done a couple of yoga classes here and there myself, though I am no yogi. But I didn't know, and you write that others, I thought Bikram yoga was some kind of thing passed down from the ages. Didn't know it was like Joe yoga, you know, named after a guy down the street in California.
Absolutely. You know, he was born in Calcutta, and he apprenticed with a very real yoga guru, Bishnu Ghosh, and he studied from the age of 3 on, became extremely adept in hatha yoga postures, and then took his show on the road, stopping off in Japan, founding studios there, and landing himself in the place of most need in this world for healing, Beverly Hills, and took up with the Hollywood elite where he immediately began teaching his classes.
Now he's got a boatload of Bentleys and followers all over the country and all around the world. We'll talk about Bikram Chowdhury, the founder of that of the school of yoga that you came into. But let's look at you first, Benjamin. You end up in competitive yoga. We'll look at that. But you were kind of a mess when you began. What got you into this world? Lots of Americans come into it for all kinds of different reasons. What brought you into yoga?
Laziness. I found my way to Bikram after kind of getting aggressively fat. I injured myself. I've always been kind of moderately athletic, you know, intermittent memberships to gyms.
Okay.
Kind of have nice genes for this day and age, so I'm pretty naturally thin, but I got injured.
G-E-N-E-S, okay.
Yes.
Not just skinny
yes.
jeans. That's not enough.
not skinny
right.
jeans.
Right.
I'm not that hip
yeah.
to pull that off. But yeah, I got injured and just used that as an excuse to take a load off and kind of aggressively ordered lo mein and sucked it down and sat on the couch and watched TV and didn't take good care of my body. And, you know, you do that long enough, even if you have nice genes, all of a sudden you find yourself overweight and unhappy. And I wanted to get back in shape, but my usual ways of getting back in shape, kind of going on jogs, I was actually worried I'd get shin splints. So I was looking for something that would be a little gentler everyone in Brooklyn where I was living, walking around with little yoga mats rolled up against their back like they're archers.
Right.
And I thought, yoga, you know, it's like vegetables. It's like fruit. It's good for you. So unbeknownst to me, I stumbled into a Bikram studio. Didn't know Bikram from any other type of yoga. It just happened to be near my house. And the next thing I knew, I took the class, and it was like, you know, Bikram Chowdhury says it's like getting hit by a truck full of flowers. The truck runs you over and bam, you know, you wake up and you're surrounded by rose petals that are fluttering all over you.
But the truck running over you part is very real as well. I mean, I was struck by how pain is such a big part of what you write about here. And right off the bat, you've got a tremendous passage in there where you write about the effect. You go to science here, too. I mean, we'll look at the soul, but the science of Bikram yoga, the science of doing this workout in the high heat, 100, 105, maybe more degrees, give us a sense of what that does to the body to go through this series of poses in that tremendous heat.
Well, I mean, it does a tremendous range of things to the body. And in fact, probably too much to do justice to right here. Probably the most exercise in heat forces the body to struggle. I mean, you can't let your brain get above, say, 105 degrees. So your body's in a constant, whenever you exercise, your body's in a constant effort to cool you down.
The blood rushing out to the surface, to the sweat pouring off, the blood trying to circulate the cool. You stay in there for 90 minutes at that temperature, and you're all about to lose the competition.
And in a hot room, you're also getting heat from the outside. So it forces the body to a decision point. You know, you got blood rushing to the surface, and because you're doing exercise, you have blood rushing to your muscles. The vital organs in the brain, you know, you got blood rushing to two different places, but not necessarily to the places that need it. So it can cause dizziness, lightheaded, nausea, and obviously it's a negotiating a balance. That it could get dangerous if the temperature gets up, although that has not been my experience in a Bikram class.
All kinds of pain there, but when you and others come out, then the truck full of flowers, the flowers part hits. What is that about? Is it just getting out of that heat, or is it something with endorphins flowing after all that stretching and pain? Describe the payoff.
I think the payoff comes on different levels. I think there's definitely a very real endorphin rush, I think, or whatever that is, endorphins, mm-hmm. kind of like in quotes for mm-hmm. whatever chemical cocktail slams your brain mm-hmm. after intense exercise. I think there's also like a visceral payoff. You know, Bikram yoga, you're in front of a mirror and you're watching your body change. You're watching yourself. It's all sorts of these narcissistic feedback loops that are happening when you're staring at yourself. And especially over time, you see your body morph from something that's overweight to slowly getting more and more toned. And that's a tremendously mm-hmm. positive and addictive feeling to watch that happen. As you go along in the practice.
You describe different people coming for different things, and some who sort of fall in love with what can be a little dangerously narcissistic about that toned body that gradually emerges, really, really stuck on that piece. Others coming for something more spiritual in their yoga practice, or that we'd put under that heading anyway. What about the range of motivations here?
Yeah, yoga, I mean, yoga's a big tent, and Bikram is only one small piece of the circus that is the American yoga scene. And even within the Bikram community, there's a humongous range of people. I think my experience was fairly typical of coming to the practice for physical benefits mm-hmm. and coming because it's out of weight. But very quickly in any sort of repetitive sequence, and Bikram yoga is kind of defined by the fact that it's a rigid 26 asana sequence. It never changes.
Asana, poses.
The beginning. Asana being poses. It never changes. And you, by doing the same sequence again and again and again, you learn about your body and you connect to your body. And I think the heat and pushing yourself to this kind of liminal place, this place right at your extremes, because you're trying to work to 100%, teaches you, you know, first it allows you to get into kind of a meditative state, kind of a blank-minded state. Mm-hmm. It also teaches you a lot about yourself and what it's like to exercise at your extremes, and ultimately that you cannot possibly exercise at extremes for a long period of time. So you learn self-compassion and compassion for others.
You track this root of yoga to the word yoke, as in like yoking an ox to a cart. In yoga's case, yoking what to what?
Well, in yoga's case, you know, it's yoking everything to everything, or yourself to your body to your mind, yourself to the universe as a whole. I think in my practice, I'm trying to do those two things, trying to connect first my body to my mind and unify that, and then ultimately trying to connect myself to the universe around me. And for me, it's a very materialistic thing, you know, kind of recognizing this, the universe is all atoms, quarks, you know, strings,
tendons,
whatever,
sinews,
what have you, and that
pains.
I'm made of this. I'm
yes.
made of the same material
yes.
that everything else is. And to me, there's to kind of realize that is it's borders on the profound. What passes for profound these days?
Ben, we have lots of people asking about the whole idea of competitive yoga. We'll come back and have you explain that to us. I'm Tom Ashbrook, little Bengali yoga sound behind us. Vikram Chaudhary himself performing this one. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
উতার পাখির ডাকে ঘুমিয়ে ওঠে পাখির ডাকে জেগে
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about yoga and one man's journey through the bending and twisting extremes of competitive yoga, Bikram yoga. The hot one. Benjamin Lohr is with us. His new book is Hellbent, Obsession, Pain, and the Search for Something Like Transcendence in Competitive Yoga. We're going to hear in a few minutes from Yoga Champ, Cynthia Ware, Judith Lassiter, who was co-founder of Yoga Journal, big figure in this world. Benjamin Lohr with us right now from New York. Here's the sound of the man who was, is, we'll ask, his guru, Vikram Chaudhary, founder of Vikram Yoga, 2007 interview with the blog American Yogi.
You know, who comes here? Been to every doctor in the world, 11 operations, tried to commit suicide, took cocaine, drugs, heroin, everything, 7 divorces, they don't want to live anymore. Even, you know what I mean? Those kind of people come who is expendable, useless. Mm-hmm. The society throw them out.
Yeah.
Also successful people, rich people.
Yes.
They come here. All I do, connect the battery, recharge them. They reborn once again. New body, new mind, new soul, new career, new life. Not one, not two, not three. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands.
Vikram Chaudhary, they're talking about who comes to his yoga classes. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's wild. I mean, you were chubby, but I don't know if you were suicidal and cocaine, drugs, heroin, divorce.
Oh, no. Let me just clarify a few things. One, I would never, ever in a million years qualify Vikram Chaudhary as my guru.
Okay.
foremost, I'm a writer.
A lot of teachers who went to those sessions and you were there, but fair enough.
No, absolutely. But foremost, I'm a writer, and foremost, the book is an exploration and really uses Bikram yoga and the competitive yoga scene as a way to address more complex issues. So
yes.
The book is really addressing the psychology of narcissism, the neurology of pain, and kind of the railroad tracks that we use to look at these more complex issues like the psychology of narcissism or what the kind of the placebo effect as looking at mind-body connection. Is the competitive yoga and the Bikram yoga scene. So, I mean, Bikram, the man, and actually one of the things that makes him so interesting is that he's a sensational character. He's incapable of quick judgments, or at least that's what the book wants to push, this idea that, you know, he's loudmouth, narcissistic.
Yeah, surprisingly so. You think you're going to find this serenity here, and here's your apotheosis of the narcissism.
Right. Well, in America, we love to romanticize yoga. We have this image that all these gurus lived in caves with skinny ribs sitting on a mat, and they handed down the yoga knowledge from one to the next.
They didn't?
From the ages. Well, that's not to say that's not part of yoga, but that's not the totality. You know, in the book I say yoga is not one holy spring. It's like 1,000 raindrops. And in America, we have trouble with this complexity, I think. We want our yoga one way or the highway, or we all have our own individual ideas of what yoga should be, and then we try to impress them on everyone else. And the fact is that Bikram is teaching a form of yoga that is very authentic to himself. His guru happened to be also trained as a weightlifter, and I think that informs the yoga mm-hmm. he's teaching. It's very much a mind over matter practice. But that doesn't mean that it's somehow invalid or it just because it doesn't correspond with our kind of more romanticized notions of sage on pillow with crystal.
fair enough. Where do you place the narcissism factor then in the big constellation of things that yoga draws out and produces? You know, there's so much, but you give a lot of attention to this one. Where does that path take you?
Well, I mean, for me, again, the theme of the book is really this idea of yoking and union mm-hmm. and resolving dichotomy and finding the whole. So Bikram Chowdhury is this guy. He's lived this fantastic life. He is an authentic healer. He's changed millions of lives, or if not millions, hundreds of thousands of lives. You know, in the book, I tell stories of people whose lives were utterly changed by the yoga, reinvented themselves, kicked heroin, alcohol, mm-hmm. you know, lost weight, grieved like a suicidal son through suicide, loss of a son through suicide. Mm-hmm. So he's done all these amazing things. And on the flip side, can be an absolute monster. And people have surrendered their lives for him, and he's cast them off. He's done terrible things to people. He is in no way someone that I look up to. But I think that's what makes him interesting. He's emblematic of a lot of our leaders. He's this charismatic figure who gets things done. He's done more to spread yoga in America than just about any other figure, or he's mm-hmm. at least in the one of the big three. Mm-hmm. But it comes at this cost, and I think it's interesting to look at these yoga gurus, what happens when people surrender themselves to them encourage or allow these narcissistic tendencies to take over.
Benjamin Lohr there, finding the whole in his book, Hellbent. We've got a lot of reaction to the whole idea of competitive yoga coming in online here, Benjamin, as we speak. Judy says, competition is not yoga. Jane says, competition and yoga seem polar opposites to me. Deborah, competitive yoga sounds like an oxymoron. Toyota yes. says, where will all this go? Competitive yoga in the Olympics, team yoga, stadiums, commercial endorsements. Will zealous parents push their kids to be yoga prodigies and have fist fights in the bleacher seats?
I love it. Well, here's the thing. Look, yoga is resolving these dichotomies. So before we rend our spandex and gnash our teeth together, it is an oxymoron, and yoga is all about resolving these oxymorons. To some extent, to me, my yoga practice is not about abolishing the ego or cutting out anything. It's the search for a union. So competition is part of my life at the moment. It's not something I want to be there necessarily, but it's there. So how do I resolve that? And yoga competition is not kneecap your opponent, Tanya Harding, Nancy
not yet,
Kerrigan.
Not yet.
Stare them down. But it's not. I've been to many of these. And I'm not a competitive yogi at this point. I did it for the book. Yeah. But I've been to many of these competitions. These are sharing events. This is yoga, in quotes, competition. It's people getting up there to demonstrate an aspect of their life that they love. And they're doing it out of love, and they're doing it to share. And in that respect, it's a beautiful thing. Yoga competition is about doing your best. It's not about your opponent doing their worst.
We're going to hear
kind of flip is an important thing for people to realize before they snap judge and, you know, kind of see this as a black and white issue. It's like, how about changing more competition to be like yoga competition rather than vice versa?
Okay, we'll hold that thought. We're going to hear in just a moment from Cynthia Ware, big yoga champ. A couple of our listeners first. Deborah in Newport News, Virginia. Deborah, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Ben Lohr.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a couple comments. Funny, it's quite a coincidence. I just came out of a Bikram yoga class. I've been doing it for...
hot and sweaty and limber. All right.
Sitting in my car, and I turned on my radio, and Great. Here you are.
Great.
I have a comment. You know, and I was quick to snap judge before I heard all of... I've never seen a competition in yoga, but from my experience, and I've been doing it for about 2.5 years, I don't understand how you could possibly compete. I understand sharing, that's fantastic, because yoga is a great way to share with each other your energy. But to compete because everybody's body is so different is an oxymoron. It doesn't make sense to me.
Because each person will be so much on their own path because their body is so much their own, singular?
Because everybody's body, your hips are different. Your muscles move differently. Your flexibility is different. I may be stronger than the girl sitting next to me, but she can touch her foot on her head.
Right.
Because she's a lot more flexible. So everybody's body responds differently to every pose. Sharing in a competition, I don't know if you should call it a competition. If that's
Deborah, we'll take it right to a champ. Let me ask you while we've got you, though. You're just out of a yoga class. Why do you do it? Why do you do Bikram yoga?
Oh, gosh. Well, I lost about 35 pounds doing it. And now
it's
an addiction.
Yeah. Yeah, you and a lot of others. Deborah, thanks for that. Benjamin Lohr, stand by. I want to bring in right here, if I may, from Redwood City, California, Cynthia Ware, two-time winner of the USA Yoga Championship, which I never heard about until meeting up with your take on all this, Ben. 2007 winner of the International Yoga Championship. Cynthia Ware in California, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thank you.
You can hear, and I'm sure you've heard before, a lot of people having cognitive dissonance about the idea of competitive yoga. How do you put those two words or ideas in the same sentence, and why do you do it, Cynthia?
Well, I got involved in the championship since pretty much day one in 2003. I didn't really have anything to base my reasoning on it when I first began. It was just, you're going to compete this weekend, and I had no idea. Over the years, every competition, every championships, it's grown. How do I put two and two together? It is a true demonstration of the self. It's a personal journey. Every competitor that you'll speak to, or mm-hmm. champion that you speak to, has their own personal journey with it.
Do you have a special pose that's your, like, master stroke, like some, I don't know, figure skaters have a great move, a triple Lutz or a gymnast have something? Do you have a killer pose, asana?
Your Mortal Kombat finishing
There are a few.
Which one? What is it? What's your like, knock 'em dead move?
Well, if I explained it to you, you might try to visualize it and maybe not visualize it. One of them would be a full standing bow, which is where you're standing on one leg and you're kicking up and you put your foot under your chin. And again, this is actually...
You mean from behind, kind of?
From standing.
Yeah.
I couldn't even do that when I won the championship.
Oh.
So that the point, the thing is what this championships does, I like to call it more of a championship rather than a competition, because it really is about becoming a champion of your breath, of your soul, of your heart and your mind. And anything in life, whether it's cooking or sewing, it's one of those things that you just fine tune your skill at. And everyone will have their own journey. I mean, I never did, backbending clubs or anything too extreme, actually, in order to demonstrate who I was at the time, in these championships. And the previous caller, when she had mentioned about, how can it be competitive with all these different bodies? Well, that's actually the beauty of it. You do see, different bodies, different nationalities. We have a youth division. You're introducing yoga to the masses on a very profound and inspirational level. It's not about mastering the posture when you get up there. It really, truly is about mastering the moment. So that's kind of where the essence lies in the championship.
You're definitely putting a challenge out there to our minds to hear that fully, to hear that wholly. Benjamin, what are you thinking here? I mean, is it really that it's not about the body, it's about the mind? A lot of sports, there are people who are physically, put together in such a way that it makes them good at those sports. What about yoga?
I mean, I think it is. It's another aspect of the yoking. I agreed with everything that Cynthia said. I think she put it quite well. The other thing I would say, and although I wouldn't qualify myself as a competitive yogi by any means, is it's there for those people who want it. It's not something, I've never seen people try to sell the idea of competitive yoga. Mm-hmm. It's for those people where competition is part of their lives. It gives them an excuse to do more yoga. It's some people, for whatever reason, they get inspired. They channel themselves through the idea of this competition, and it gives them an excuse to practice for, you know, longer than they would otherwise and hone this thing that's meaningful to them. Why it upsets people so much,
I don't even know if it's outrage, but it's confusing, maybe because, and you write about this, people have this notion of, you know, serenity and kind of a crunchy, you know, I don't know what to call it, that comes along with yoga, and competition, the very word competitive seems in opposition to that somehow.
Right. Well, I think the idea, there was a co-option of yoga by people who wanted to focus on like serenity, peace, abolishing the yoga, and at least as just from my own personal practice, that's not the roots where that's not how I practice. I'm searching for a whole and searching for connection with things. And so serenity is part of reality. And so is pain. And so is, you know, so is competition to some extent. And so to me, it's just an organic process of, you know, finding a whole self.
Cynthia, what have you found in this world? I mean, you're the champ. More serenity or more pain?
More serenity, but understanding the pain, you know, making pain your comfort rather than discomfort. Because I think in life, if you constantly fight the pain, guess what? You're going to fight pain forever and ever, whether it's physical pain or mental pain. So that's really my take on that.
Make pain your comfort. What about just if you stop doing the thing that brings you pain, if that's yoga, maybe that would stop the pain.
Well, here's the thing about pain.
Pain is such a huge word, you know. You can't just say, I'm talking about pain, like if it's an emotional or physical pain, like sharpshooting, like my knee is about to crack pain, that is obviously, yes, that is when you really, you know, that is a moment where you stop, you know, and you educate yourself on how to create balance, as Benjamin put so great in the book. It's a duality. It's you're finding the balance between, you know, your mind and your body and your heart and your spirit. So it's a pain that you make, that you turn into peace in whatever way, whether it's through yoga or stopping yoga or whatever it is. So
a pain you turn into peace. Words from the champion there. Cynthia Ware in Redwood City, California, two-time winner of the USA Yoga Championship, winner of the International Yoga Championship. Cynthia, good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Peace to you.
Thank you
for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about yoga. My guest is Benjamin Lohr. His new book is Hellbent, Obsession, Pain, and the Search for Something Like Transcendence in Competitive Yoga. Here's a little sound from the 2009 USA Yoga Asana Championship with Judge Donna Rubin here explaining the point system to a reporter from New York Magazine.
If they reach the full expression of the posture where they have the maximum flexibility that you couldn't go any further, let's say, and the maximum balance, that would be a 10. But if you start to wobble or shake, or if you don't quite reach the posture, then you would get little points taken off accordingly.
Benjamin Lohr did it, still does it, not competitively, but still practices the yoga. He's with us. Benjamin, what was your best moment in yoga? What would have made up for you a great moment in yoga?
A great moment in yoga is just a moment of connecting with yourself. You know, it just happens from time to time in class or every class. You get these small moments where you you reach some sort of peace and clarity of mind, and it's very pleasant. You know, I don't want to over-glamorize these things. I think that they're small, they're real, and they're nice. But
they're, for many people, including yourself, addictive. I mean...
Well, no, I actually don't think that's what's addictive. I think Bikram yoga is addictive for a lot of reasons. One, like I said, you're staring at yourself in the mirror. You're watching your body change. You're getting these enormous feedback loops of like, oh, my God, I can get six-pack abs if I just push myself harder. You have this psychotically confident instructor in Bikram yoga classes who is telling you that what you are doing is wonderful for yourself. And that's because I think that's actually both a positive and negative part of the practice, but that's the kind of defines Bikram yoga instruction. You know, this posture is cleaning your kidneys out, and this posture is, you know, you're constantly being told about how good the practice is for you. There's also this enormous endorphin rush that comes after class, where you're kind of basking in the glow of really pushing your body to an extreme place. And it's the same thing you get after running, climbing a mountain. Mm-hmm. You get this sense of accomplishment, because in that hour and a half, if you take the instructor's word seriously and you push your body, you're getting a tremendous workout, or you're if not a tremendous workout, you're getting a tremendous experience of exertion. And that produces its own, you know, positive feedback. So I put the addiction on all those things, not on the small moments of peace and meditation that come from it. Those are all side benefits or side deficits, as the case may be.
I liked your book because it goes deep. It doesn't glamorize, but it's quite a fantastic realm you're describing here. What about on the other side of it? If those are the best moments, what are your worst moments or outcomes?
Well, the worst moments, you know, the Bikram yoga teacher training, there was plenty of high points and plenty of lovely points. I think Bikram the man, I just found him fascinating in the way, you know, it's kind of like going up the Congo and finding Captain Kurtz.
You quote a lot of Joseph Conrad in your Heart of Darkness stuff through the
book. Not enough. He's, you know, he's this babbling, leer-like figure on the throne. He's surrounded by people who, unpaid, who will do what he asks when he asks it. There are massage girls massaging his ankles, someone else massaging his shoulders, someone else fetching him a Coca-Cola when he barks for it.
Wax my Bentley, baby.
He likes to wax his own Bentleys. Okay. I don't think he'd let anyone touch his Bentley.
Oh,
and he's, you know, he's lonely by his own admission. He's highly controlling, and you know, manages the people around him according to his whims. And so finding that aspect of the yoga out, you know, after coming up the scenic Congo River,
yes.
Not that that doesn't pair well with Joseph Conrad very well, but that was disturbing and fascinating.
But there it was, right at the root of the river. Doug in Nashville is calling. Doug, you're on with Benjamin Lohr.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And Benjamin. I wanted to respond. I think we're confusing yoga with the deliverer of the yoga, in that I feel like yoga is a process through which we go through that brings about wholeness, that brings about healing, that brings about a unity that they call yoke, which is the meaning of yoga. And when we talk about Bikram as saving people from suicide or helping millions of people, I think there's a confusion there from... the yoga is what's helping people, and it's not Bikram himself. And I think we feed a certain narcissism in our culture and a sort of guru worship and a sort of hero worship and addiction when we focus on somebody that happens to have a particularly open and gifted body or particularly open and gifted teacher as the yoga itself, when it's the process that's the yoga, not the person delivering it.
A good point. I'm glad you raised it. Benjamin, what do you say?
To a large extent, I couldn't agree more. I think the flip side is, though, a lot of those people wouldn't have found their way to a yoga class if Bikram hadn't gone and made his mass-produced yoga and put it in strip malls across America. So while I don't want to give him credit for the process, and I think that it is a very much an individualistic pursuit, I do think that failing to recognize that some of the narcissistic fuels that, you know, created who he is also did a lot to spread the process of yoga and make it more accessible to people throughout the U.S. and in the world.
And now spreading even more than he might like, one of his top students, Greg, is it Gumuccio, who went off and started his own thing and was sued by Bikram, and now, what, I guess they've settled just in the last week or so, but Bikram looked to copyright these yoga moves, which I would think are thousands of years old, but is he still on that path?
Well, you know, I think that goes right to his issues of narcissism and control, and I give Greg a lot of credit for what he did in settling the case. To my reading of his statement, he just said, look, I want to disentangle myself from this guy. The U.S. Copyright Office has spoken pretty clearly at this point that yoga cannot be copyrighted. However, in this particular lawsuit, I'm not going to do battle with Bikram.
He says he's not going to teach the 26 asana poses at the heart of Bikram Yoga anymore.
Right. He's going to innovate.
That's kind of like a victory. Bikram.
It's a victory for Greg. It's a victory for everyone. Greg is going to innovate. Mm-hmm. Bikram gets to be the kid who wants to play with his toy all by himself, and he gets to play with his toy in the corner. And the yoga community gets the benefit because now we have, you know, one of Bikram's former teachers doing his own thing and growing into his own person. And you know, I've never taken a class at Yoga to the People, but I'm going to check it out now because now there's this new yoga offering. So, to some extent, I think of it.
Yoga to the People, the offshoot group here, and a settlement there. Bikram Chowdhury looking to copyright it the way what the dance choreographers can copyright dance. Patrick in Buffalo, New York. Patrick, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that for me, there's a huge disconnect, like there has been for many others. And I appreciate your sort of skeptical mediation of this conversation. But I think that there's something about being the speaker Benjamin said that he wanted to be connected to the universe around me. But it seems that in competition, there's a sense of being better than the universe that's around you that doesn't quite make sense to me. And just another point, and I'll be happy to take your comments off the air, is that there are other forms that use the same poses each time, Ashtanga yoga being one of them. And my sense is that Bikram is something that attracts people because they want to lose weight, and they go into it because they don't know anything else, and if the yoga serves them well, they stay in that style. But I suggest that Bikram is sort of yoga with training wheels until you get to some of the more contemplative elements of the practice where you maybe seek a different system that allows a little more for that and a little less sort of in the forcing people here or there that you get with Bikram. But I did appreciate his sense of humor in the clips that you played of him sort of leading classes.
Yes,
and I thought that was the best piece that he brought to the puzzle.
Patrick, I appreciate your call. I don't know, those sound like yogic fighting words, though, yoga with training wheels, but we'll look at that. I appreciate your call from Buffalo. If I may, Benjamin Lohr, stand by with us right now from San Francisco. Is Judith Lassiter, an Iyengar yoga instructor for many years, author of 8 books on yoga, co-founder of Yoga Journal. Judith Lassiter, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi. How are you, Tom?
Well, you've been in this world for a long time, and now we have, maybe there's always been. I mean, Bikram Chowdhury himself was in yoga competitions, I guess, in India before he came to the States. But what do you think of this world of competitive yoga, this expression of yoga, Judith?
Well, I don't believe that we should, I agree with your guest, that we should hold on to what we view as yoga and try to make everyone else fit into that cookie-cutter mold, because we're all different. People need different things at different times. But I want to make a statement. Yoga is, the term yoga itself, every time I hear that word, I almost bristle because there's not a clarity in my mind about it. It is the way it's used, and the way it's being used in this program that I hear mostly is it's about asana practice, which is the poses. And yoga is two things, really. If we look at the ancient books about it, it is a state of being, and it is the practices associated with that state. asana, pranayama breathing, and meditation.
And what's at the heart of the state of being? What's the quality or the condition at the state of that being, Judith?
Well, the thing is, we are already that. We are at our core already serene.
Serenity,
and
then.
Serene, a better way to say it to me is radically present. We are already ourselves. And the practice to me is a combination of action, reflection, action, reflection, action, reflection. And the way we practice, the asana can be a physical exercise, which is great. Americans need it.
Mm-hmm.
It can be something that helps your mood. There's physiological studies. I've been part of four National Institute of Health studies consulting about the effects of yoga on the physical part. But there's the emotional part, and there is something. It can be a spiritual experience, but walking in the woods can be a spiritual experience.
So, are you endorsing our caller Doug from Buffalo? Then he says Bikram is yoga with training wheels before you get to the more contemplative stuff, or can it be right in there along with the asana with the poses? Isn't that the idea?
I endorse all points of view. To me, the sign of progress, a sign of progress in your practice is not, okay, now I can do lotus pose. Because if we tie our progress in yoga to that, what happens when we're old and we can't do these things? What happens when we're injured? What happens when we have limitation to asana as our only practice? So to me, it's all about the intention with which I go to the mat. Do I go to the mat because I basically don't like myself and I want to be different? Or do I go to the mat to find a profound level of self-welcoming? That maybe on this day I need to challenge myself, that's really being kind to myself. And other days I need to do a relaxation practice because that's being really in present with what I need. This is not a practice to me personally any longer of transformation into something else. It is much more a practice about integration. Me with me with you, me with where I am.
Judith, you make us radically present right there, and we are grateful for that. Co-founder of Yoga Journal with us from San Francisco. Judith, thank you so much for joining us. Charlotte in New Orleans, Louisiana. Thanks for joining us, Charlotte. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to share my story about competitive yoga. Thank you for the book, Ben. Love it. I'm a Bikram yoga teacher, and I never would be where I am today if my teacher 7 years ago hadn't just thrown the idea out there, hey, Charlotte, do you want to do a yoga competition? I had never heard of that before. I wasn't even very good at yoga. I didn't consider myself really a yogi. And it just gave me an opportunity to discover who I am and my potential and to train at a higher level, to do something I never imagined that I could ever do.
Was it mainly a physical or a spiritual or mental challenge for you, Charlotte?
It was all of the above. All of the above.
Are you a better person for having competed, or, you know, why not just do the practice without the competition?
Well, I did the competition once, and I never really had the desire to do it again, but I went to the teacher training, and I continue to teach. I've been teaching for 6 years now, and I moved to New Orleans to teach yoga to kids. And really, anyone who wanted to bend.
Wanted to bend. Worked for you. Charlotte, thank you so much for your call. Benjamin Lord, there's so much in here. We'll just begin to scratch in this hour. But how do you convey to people what your yoga journey has brought you? What have you learned on this journey that's most important?
Oh, God. I've learned a lot of self-compassion and a lot of compassion for other people. You know, everything that Judith and Charlotte said, I think, You know, I want to echo it as much as possible. I think it's all of the above. There's nothing mutually exclusive about any of this stuff. I think, you know, Bikram doesn't have to be yoga with turning wheels. I think it can be, and I think that it might be. It's a lovely thing for people to practice Bikram and then grow out of it and do other things. I think you can also reach profound meditative states and spiritual states within that practice. I think at a certain point you'll probably run up against limitations. And want to move forward and innovate for yourself. For me, that was the take-home message of the book. That was one of two. One, that there isn't one routine mm-hmm. or one kind of system. That it is this larger idea of searching for integration and coming to terms with that and finding that in other places. And two, this idea of cohesion with dichotomies and not coming to snap judgments about people, whether I find them initially repulsive or initially saintly, and kind of trying to see them as a whole.
Pretty good lessons there, and a really supple telling of the journey. I enjoyed it a lot. My compliments to you, Benjamin. A spiritual thriller, Walter Kern called it. I think that's right. The book is Hellbent, Obsession, Pain, and the Search for Something Like Transcendence in Competitive Yoga. Benjamin Lohr, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Listeners, tomorrow we're talking about big money investors who are buying up piles of homes, whole neighborhoods. We'll look at that real estate market and housing in this new kind of land rush. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.